that's what kicks in the need for the license. So that's a universal.
I have 23rd and I have 29th.
No, 24.
24, the last Friday.
Roll call.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Here.
Trustee Samuels?
Here.
Trustee Kerr?
Here.
Trustee Tolliver?
Proper notice was given?
Yes, it was.
Now, at the point of our minutes?
I move that we approve the previous minutes.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second. I second.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
So ordered. We now go into our first item on the agenda, which is item B, I believe. And who's the president here? Dr.
Thursday.
Good morning, board.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm not sure how you like me to begin, but I could just simply tell you about the what the resolution is and what the proposal is.
Okay, that'd be fine.
All right. In case you don't know me, my name is Jan Searcy, Dr. Searcy. I'm in the Department of Social Work and Sociology. Myself, along with Dr. Troy Harden in the Department of Social Work, we are co-principal investigators on what's called, what we call, Project Mentor, but in terms of the grant, it's called the Youth Empowerment Program. For 3 years, we have gained a grant from the Department of Health and Human Services, the Office of Minority Health, to follow Hyde Park High School students over 3 years, and we're ultimately the goal is to improve health outcomes, overall health outcomes. And this particular program is broadly defined health outcomes in terms of not just fitness and nutrition, but also social-emotional health, sexual health, educational health, and the like. We, as it's called Project Mentor, the program gives each of the high school students a mentor, which the mentors are supposed to have two times monthly contact. So we call it site-based mentoring plus, so there's actually mentoring that happens on site, and then outside of the actual program that there are contacts with the students. We actually finished our first year of the program. We were okayed for the next year of the program, so we're going into year two, and that hence the reason for me being here is to gain board approval so that we can receive the funds. I can tell you this, that last week Thursday, we had our first project related to Project Mentor. We were a little bit late getting started overall with the students because we had difficulties going through primarily with the Chicago Public Schools, their research review board. We went through a number of different roadblocks, but we finally got approved, and so that's what precluded an earlier start with this. But what I want to say to you is that we had quite an auditorium, but it was a sub-auditorium at Hyde Park High School last week, Thursday, and the youth who participated in the December portion of the program presented a research project to members of the community. And in fact, we videotaped it. We're going to ultimately post it on YouTube, but also we're developing a website for this program. And in this community presentation, they did a research project, and they wanted to find out whether or not teens knew the risks involved with having unprotected sex. And so they did a multimedia presentation, and it was very well received by their other students as well as community members. In fact, Dr. Finney, some people you know who were actually present at this at Hyde Park High School, Terrence's last name? I'm forgetting Terrence, but he works for WPIC, as well as Arvin Strange was in attendance. And Dr. Terry Kilbane, who's now at Loyola, in fact, told me that she was one of your former students at SSA in, well, a few years ago. I'll just put it that way.
Quite a few years ago.
So a number of community members actually came. So in a nutshell, that's we're doing some excellent work right now, and we're continuing on. And just there's a research component of this. We actually have a control group. So the ultimate goal of this is to have research results that could potentially, which want to inform future programs as well as make this model portable. So whether you're in Chicago, whether you're in Kansas City, whether you're in Los Angeles, wherever you may be, that this type of program will be linked to empirical results, and so that if you do this, you follow this type of model, then you're going to expect certain positive results.
Any questions?
I have a question. Who are the mentors?
We're still actually identifying some, and it's males and females, so all of you are welcome to be mentors who happen to be as part of the board. So we actually have, and I forgot this, that it's an important component of this. This is a collaborative program. We are the lead investigators on this, but Loyola University as well as UIC is involved in this. Loyola is providing a lot of the direction related to coordinating the mentors. And so there's people from the community. There's actually a presentation we're doing. Well, the graduate student who's doing the presentation is from Loyola, but she's approaching members of the Chicago Police Force to become mentors as part of this program. So anyone, and you may suggest, if you know somebody,
yes,
please let me know. But one of the things with mentors, a lot of times people say that they want to be mentors, and they are engaged for, okay, about that long, and then after that, they kind of drop off. So we want people who are willing to at least make a two-year commitment. So that happens to be the problem. So we have secured about 10, but we really want to locate at least 40 total mentors.
In your mentor selecting process, is there also a criminal background check on these people?
Most definitely. Not just criminal, but what's called, there's CANTS and LEADS checks. So the LEADS is Law Enforcement Agency Data System, which does the criminal background. And then there's the CANTS, which is Child Abuse and Neglect Tracking System. So in case there's any hits in terms of, sorry, let me not utilize such language. In case there happen to be any cases of or allegations, substantiated allegations of abuse or neglect, then that person would not be eligible.
And also, for your off-site meetings, is that chaperoned?
No. So we're not going to select somebody who's a mentor who has a history which would suggest that there's going to be problems. Now, just a note related to this, let me be clear. Sometimes the best mentors are those individuals who may have had a criminal history. So that does not automatically render somebody ineligible to be a mentor. But there are certain guidelines that the state has in terms of being able to select individuals.
My concern would also be for the mentor as well. The reason I ask about it being chaperoned is in the event that maybe the mentor is close to age or there's an older teenager, so that nothing can be implied. Would the mentor be protected as well?
Certainly. We also are utilizing some, they're doing some recruitment on campus here at Chicago State, because we also, when you're saying teens, we're also looking to have that these high school students can see that there's a trajectory, there's a educational and career trajectory, so that, okay, this person may have come from Park High School, now they're a junior at Chicago State, and hence it's possible for them at being age 15, they can possibly go to college. So thank you for raising that question.
Yes, Trustee Simon.
A question about the time commitment for the mentor and the students. Is this a daily after school activity?
Excellent question. Actually, it is. There's some, the summer program was 4 days a week, all right? And actually, we were able to provide them a stipend, and actually today is payday for them, so a lot of them will be coming to the cashier's office today. So we utilized this research project. It ended up being we said it was their job, so you were going to be dock pay if you showed up late, and actually it was from 9:30, actually it was 9 o'clock until 1 o'clock. Now during the school year, and we actually just had a meeting yesterday related to the actual scheduling, it will be 5 days that Project Mentor is. They will have contact with Project Mentor, but specifically with programming, we are going to have 2 days, Tuesdays and Thursdays, we've been granted the ability to utilize just our Project Mentor youth. Mm-hmm. We actually get the divisions. So all of the Project Mentor youth who are involved will be in a separate specific division. So that will be from 9:30 until I think 10:15 on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And then we also have after school activities. And another community partner that I'm neglecting here happens to be the YMCA on 63rd and Stony Island. So a lot of the fitness activities will be taking place at the YMCA. And so after school, actually one of the personal trainers from the YMCA will be instructing the youth. So those will be after school, but those will be 4 days. But then with the time commitment related to the mentors, we asked at least two contacts, physical contacts during the month. And so with those contacts, time should be about 2 hours each contact. And it could be more, so we're just saying at a minimum that it should be 2 hours each time.
And that would be at the school?
Well, one time would be whether it's at the school or at the Y. So for example, with these fitness activities, and I don't want to dissuade anybody from participating, but it would be good to see or have the young person see their mentor working out along with them.
Oh, no.
And that's everybody else in the audience as well who may want to participate.
Okay. I don't know. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the resolution as presented.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
I second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
So ordered. Next item is...
Mr. Chairman, Hampton University, they have a... they're working on a model right now. And if it's a mentorship model, I'd like to share with you the chairman of the psychology department. I ran into her about 2 weeks ago, and it's something that might be able to feed into what you're doing. And they're looking for another university that can work with them in developing this mentorship model. Okay. So it's something that might be able to help. Okay.
Next item. Thank you very much, Mr. President. The next item on the agenda is approval of the contract development for flexible solar cells.
Yeah,
that's it.
We already have a contract with the Department of Defense to. Research, design, and manufacture solar cells. This particular proposal is an opportunity for us to both increase the amount of the contract from about $1.4 million to a little over $2 million and extend the date of the work until July of 2011. This is work we've been doing for a couple of years now, and the offer to extend and increase this contract is a vote of confidence in the work that we've been doing.
Any questions?
Yes, I do. I'd like to understand, if you can briefly just tell me the connection with the students and the curriculum in this program.
Yes, several fold. First of all, we have faculty that are doing the basic research, and we involve the students in that research, and we pay them salaries, and we also provide some waivers of tuition for them to work with us. There's a significant student training component to this in terms of the students both working with the faculty on the basic research, as well as working with our subcontractor, which is American Science and Technology. They're an engineering firm, which is renting space in our incubator facility on Cottage Grove. So they have an opportunity to work with those people also. And as a result of their participation in the program, they also have an opportunity to present their research at local and national conferences. So we've had a number of presentations by students in that regard.
Okay, so how many students and how many faculty?
We have four faculty, and at any given time, between a half dozen and a dozen students. It fluctuates according to the time.
So they vary. They're different students.
Yeah, some rotate in and some rotate out as they graduate.
Okay, thank you.
More questions?
I move that we approve the resolution as presented.
It's been moved.
Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes. Thank you very much. Okay. Moving right along.
Good morning, trustees.
Good morning.
I have a number of items on the...
Would you identify yourself for the minutes?
I'm C. Cole Dillon. I'm the Chief Information Officer. So I have a number of items on this...
You have four items.
I'm sorry. The first is the annual maintenance for Banner. Banner is our ERP system. It runs all of our human resources, our student services, our financial services, and we have to pay an annual maintenance for Banner every year that is in excess of $250,000. And this year, we negotiated with the SunGard Corporation to allow us to pay those payments quarterly. And they sent us a bill for the quarterly payments for 2010, but did not send us a bill for the annual payment for 2011. They sent us a quarterly bill for the payments for 2011, but did not send us a bill until after the end of the fiscal year for the payment due for 2010. And that's why there are two contracts that are here. One is to pay the maintenance bill that was due on June 30th of 2010, and then the other is to approve us to be able to pay in quarterly installments for this academic year. And we have requested to pay that bill in installments so that it improves the cash flow of the university rather than having a $250,000 bill come due on the last day of the fiscal year.
Okay. Any questions? Is there a motion?
So moved.
It's been moved.
Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes. So ordered.
The next item on the agenda is asking for approval for annual consulting with the Banner Corporation. We have a number of projects that we want to do this year to improve the automation of the Banner system, as well as we want to upgrade from version 7.4 to version 8. And by doing these projects, we will be able to provide better information to the university, cleaner information to the university, so that we can run the university's business by metrics. And so we anticipate, we have negotiated with the SunGard Corporation a reduction in the hourly consulting rate from $220 an hour in the last contract to $190 an hour for this contract. However, we anticipate that the number of hours that we will incur will be cumulatively greater than $100,000, and therefore we are asking the board to give us approval to spend that amount of money on consulting to improve the Banner system.
And is this consulting, does that include any programming to do the integration of those systems?
Yes.
It does.
And my other questions? Hearing none. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
Thank you. The next item that I have on the agenda is a resolution asking the board to authorize us to purchase iPads for the freshman class. And the proposal is that for the first-time freshmen, that we would provide every one of them with a device, and that for the freshman classes, these devices have been incorporated as part of the pedagogy so that the faculty who are teaching these classes have received training on how to use them and how to incorporate them as technology for educational purposes. We view this as part of the effort to improve recruitment, retention, and graduation here at Chicago State, but also to ensure that our students have the opportunity to participate in the economy that's evolving. If you take a look at what most futurists are saying, they're saying about half of the jobs that are going to exist for these students who are going to graduate do not exist today. And they have to be able to functionally use technology to even be able to qualify for those jobs that don't exist. And across the nation, a number of universities have undertaken device programs where they provide a device to their students. The iPad is the newest device, and there are about 15 universities that are known to have announced these programs. Historically, if you look across device programs and universities, these initiatives have not been led by PBI institutions, but by majority institutions. But I've done a lot of research, and there are a lot of initiatives that have been in the K through 12 in lower income communities, and the research shows that there is an improved outcome with respect to providing these devices in lower income communities. So we would like the board's permission to have an iPad program for freshmen. This would be the first year. We would do this every year. So it's not a one-time program, but it is an initiative to improve the technology use for educational purposes here at Chicago State.
I have two statements and a question. In January of this year, I was fortunate enough to receive an invitation from the Saudi Arabian Government Investment Authority to attend a conference which they held in Saudi Arabia on global competitiveness. And they brought together the world's most successfully competitive people in various fields, including academia, in the world. And the theme that constantly emerged from every sector was the appropriate use of technology and getting involved with communication technology. This is where the world is going. And that anyone who fails to be in touch with that is going to fall behind. So I'm excited. Saudi Arabia is seeking to become the 10th, they have a 2010 program seeking to become the 10th most competitive country in the world. So that's why they're convening all these thinkers and paying big money to bring them together. The second statement is this. Sunday, being technologically somewhat illiterate, Sunday I had dinner with some friends whose daughter works in enrollment management, admissions at one of our major universities in Chicago. And when I told her about what I had to vote on, she got super excited. And she said, I'm going back to our admissions office and tell them what they're doing at Chicago State. And so I said to her, tell me what an iPad does. And she showed me her Kindle and other kinds of stuff and says it combines all of these activities in one thing. And so I'm still a little illiterate on that. So my question then to you is, you talked about how this device will be an asset. Explain to the board what this item does.
Okay. The Kindle is what we call a tablet computer, and it's a tablet computer that is based on the idea that the information that you need exists in what we call the cloud. Now, the cloud, people talk about the cloud and they don't explain it. And really what the cloud is talking about is putting your data on the internet as opposed to having a device, which means that your data will be accessible to you anywhere in the world, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you don't have to worry about whether or not your thumb drive device is corrupted, whether or not you remember to save it. It's there for you all of the time. From the perspective of considering this specific device for this program, I looked at a number of factors. One of the things that I'm very concerned about and have worked very hard at in the 8 months that I've been at Chicago State is a green initiative, reducing the amount of paper that we use. So we've gone completely paperless on our contracts. We've gone completely paperless for our HR function. And that means that, and we've also put in a portal for students. So students can now go online and they can register with a single sign-on. They can go online and get their email, same single sign-on. They can go online and see their bill, same single sign-on. And so I'm very concerned about Chicago State students being in the forefront of what's happening technologically, as well as being as green as we can be and reducing the amount of paper consumption that we do at the university. And that means increasingly putting these activities online and making sure that students have access to them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, I will say for certain right now today, we have a 6-hour maintenance window that we declare every night in order to do backups. But we now have the equipment that we are in the process of installing that will allow us to do that seamlessly without having to declare a maintenance window. So by the time students come back to school, they will have access to the Cougar Connect portal 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to be able to do all of their university transactions online.
Question still related. When my friend said it combines the function of her Kindle,
right.
I got excited, and I didn't hear you mention this, because one of the things we hear about is lack of access to books in the library, mm-hmm. and the Kindle allows one to access books, to take notes. Does that iPad serve that function?
Yes, sir.
I think it's important for you to talk about that piece, too, because that supports the academic mission and a lot of the complaints we get about lack of resources in the library.
So but the Kindle, I mean, the iPad has several book readers. One is iBooks that came from Apple. One is Kindle that came from Amazon. And so what that means is that you can download a book and read, and instead of having a physical book, you have an electronic book. The complete works of Shakespeare, for instance, are available for download for a cost of $5. You couldn't buy a book unless it was 100 years old with the complete works of Shakespeare for $5. So what it does is a couple of things. One is the textbook industry is revolutionizing. And if you look at what the strategists for the book industry are saying to textbook manufacturers, publishing a book is old technology. And they're all organizing their businesses around delivering books electronically. Because in addition to the iPad, there are a number of other devices like the Kindle, the Sony eBook reader, that are designed to let you put your book in your pocket. But also, the difference in cost between a published book and an eBook is significant. So that you would look at a greater than 50% cost reduction if you just got the content without getting the book. So for our students who spend approximately $1,600 a year on books, if we could cut that down to $800 or $600, or ultimately our goal of $200, then we have done a fantastic thing for our students. But more importantly, it isn't just books. It is, you can have your alarm clock, you can have your calculator. There are many other devices that, you know, as a student, you're carrying around, and you're carrying around cords and looking for power. You can have all of those devices inside of this device and use that, this one device that weighs less than a pound. So if you think about, you know, putting 40 pounds of books on your back as opposed to carrying this with all of those books in it, plus your calculator, plus your alarm clock, plus your Skype application that will allow you to make phone calls. You know, you have revolutionized the way that you deal with school as a student.
Are the students going to be trained on all of these? If should we vote to do it, would the students be trained
yes.
on? My last statement is this, which I think is illogical. I read some blog where some cynical person said, well, if we provide these, then we're setting the students up to be robbed. And I say this based on personal experience, not in Chicago. I tell people my most valued items in my house, when I have been burglarized in two other cities, my art collection, burglars don't want that. They want the DVD. They want the thing they can sell fast on the street. and the people who rob you on the street have no idea what that is, and they have no market where they can sell it. So anybody who would be concerned about students getting robbed of iPads is not in touch with the reality of what robbers steal on the street.
I have a question.
Any other questions?
I have questions.
You may want to speak to that, though.
We have a question.
As you know, a lot of our incoming freshmen come in below math and reading levels. So is Apple offering some type of tutorial for math or something that they can do independent study on so that these don't just turn into something that people are using only for Facebook or required assignments?
You know what? I think that is a fantastic question. I did an incredible amount of research before picking this device. And part of the reason that I picked this device is because of iTunes University. iTunes University records lectures on every subject, every academic subject matter from professors around the world. So for instance, if you were having a problem with statistics, you could not only go to your own class, but you can go to iTunes University, type in statistics, and be able to get lectures from around the world where professors are teaching that subject matter. So you can get a lot more information about that subject matter. You can start to compare syllabuses and actually see people are teaching the same thing, but maybe teaching it in a different way. So I actually had a student who goes to another university tell me that that's the purpose for which he uses his iPad is he doesn't relate to his statistics professor, but that's the only professor that he can take the class from. So he's taking that class, but he's actually learning it via his iPad online. So yes, there is an incredible amount of pedagogical material from at university levels, from leading universities all around the world, where students can go and download the lecture and on almost any subject matter that you can think of. So it is very much a learning device.
See, Cole, can you share with the trustee the conversation we had with the senior vice president of Apple last week, where he was talking about they're going to work, they're considering working with us on developing andragogical techniques for our cohort of students, students who come to us with the math and reading challenges that we have in college?
So the program for the iPad is, the iPad itself is a device as well as the infrastructure to support utilizing the iPad in the classroom. And Dr. Watson and I had a conversation with the Vice President of Apple Higher Education with respect to how we plan on using this device. So part of Apple's commitment to Chicago State is to bring their leading minds together with our program to help us learn the best practices from all of the other institutions that are using this device. And to incorporate those things into our program. So our program is, yes, to give a device to every student, but also to provide an Apple Service Center here on Chicago State campus to provide for lecture capture so that students can time shift their lecture. If you miss a lecture or if you need to hear it again, that lecture will be recorded and will be available in a Chicago State iTunes University store. And just to ensure that we are working with the best minds that are utilizing these devices in higher education to ensure that Chicago State has a first-class program and that it is about the pedagogy of using technology in the classroom and not just about Facebook.
Okay. Will certain curriculums be based on the usage of that iPad?
Yes. So all of the freshman block classes, and Dr. Gist is here and she can speak to that, but since this is a device that's been given to all freshmen, we have made an effort to make sure that the device is included in the pedagogy for those classes. So I'll let you speak to that.
Okay. The College of Ed, Sylvia Gist, Dean of the College of Education. The College of Ed is involved in the iPad training from the standpoint of making sure that the content area and information in the content areas is covered in a meaningful way. We have identified 22 content areas and 40 faculty members who, this is campus-wide, who we will train utilizing the iPad. And this training is going to be designed for several purposes. Well, number one, the initial phase of the training, or phase one, involves the introduction to the functions of the iPad, so that all of the faculty members will know how to use the iPad, where to go to get the applications, and so forth. Then the second phase of the training, and the first phase of the training is currently happening. It will go on through next week. The second phase of the training will start the following week, and that's where the College of Ed is involved. We will start out by covering information such as location of resources for the various content areas, for the 22 or more content areas. We're looking at identifying resources such as applications and iBooks that are free. Our training will be basically designed around the free resources. As Nicole mentioned, there are a number of apps that are $5 to $10. But we will focus on the free resources. We will cover retrieval of resources, where to go to get these resources, like iUniversity or iBooks or wherever. We will cover integration of these resources into teaching. How do you integrate them in a meaningful way for the student? Course organization, course management, to make sure that these resources or these iPads are not seen as toys. And I might add that the College of Ed has about 7 or 8 years of experience in teaching courses that involve integration of technology into teaching. So we're not starting from scratch. We are starting from scratch in the sense that as you go out there and look for resources that involve integration of teaching, you don't find very many resources out there. So we are sort of starting from scratch, but my team in the College of Ed are working very, very hard, and we definitely plan to be ready by next week. We won't let it end at integration into teaching. There will be continuous assessment, formative assessment, summative assessment, and making sure that the instructors or the teachers know how to do this assessment. And finally, we are going to look at, we think that this is fertile ground for research, especially research for our doctoral students, the impact of the iPad on learning, the impact of the iPad on integration. So we just think that we can go miles and miles with this device.
I'm in favor. I really like the idea of it, but there are just a few things that I would like to understand better. And maybe if I rephrase it, my question is when I say curriculums be based on the usage, is there a measure in place to see that it's actually working? And also, as you know, we have a lot of students who are in mixed classes, so you might have classes with freshmen, juniors, seniors. My question is, if there's a class, or hypothetically, would there be a class where usage is contingent on passing the class? Because I would be concerned for students who, let's say, they damaged theirs or they lost theirs, or students who have to take that class because it's mandatory for them to graduate, but they don't have an iPad. So would they still be able to complete their assignments and turn in their work? That's my question.
So what we've done is freshmen this year are being organized in block classes. And where the block class schedule, for instance, for 099 math is open to other students, what we've done is to create sections that are freshmen only so that you won't run into that particular issue. We have not focused on this device at this time as being so integrated into the curriculum that you would fail by not having a device itself. We're looking at it as being an aid to help people leg up, if you will, to have access to more resources, access to information 24 hours a day, which is what's happening for this generation. So what we are seeking to do is to meet students where they are and to make instruction make sense to students who were born in the digital age, as opposed to ignoring that students today, they live in a different age. They live in the age of information abundance. And what we have to do is to make sure that for all of that abundant information that's available out there, that they can access it, that they understand it, that they can critically think about it, and that they can use it properly pedagogically. And that's what we're seeking to do through this program.
And is there an opt-out option for incoming freshmen who may already have their own iPad or laptop and don't want to incur the cost or responsibility of a university-issued iPad?
Certainly, you know, it's something that we will have to think about. Presumptively, because this device is so new, I don't expect a lot of freshmen to show up with it, but I also don't expect that we as a university would force a device on any student. So we would have to have that conversation as it arose. But you've given me something to think about, and I will look at it from a policy perspective. Certainly, there are other schools who have given devices, and I'm sure that there are students who have shown up with devices. So I will look to see what other universities have done in that regard, and you know, we will model our practice after the best practices out there.
Thank you. You've missed another point, and you can't be comprehensive. Two things. Dr. Watson asked you to talk about what the representative from Apple had said in terms of supporting people who had math deficiencies. You really didn't answer that. But the bigger question, the bigger comment I wanted to make is at the conference in Saudi Arabia, one person talked about, given the shrinkage of public funding for higher education, which we all know is real, part of the future of raising money is developing relationships with corporations specifically and providing them the kinds of graduates that their workforce needs. And so I see that kind of linkage with Apple, but it relates to this too. In terms of workforce development beyond here, you got to know this stuff to go out here and look for a job where the jobs are today. And that's where students of top-tier universities have the cutting edge on others because they haven't been exposed to these various technologies. That the assumption in the work world in some areas is you know how to use it.
So specifically with respect to math classes and our discussion with the Apple Vice President for Higher Education, what we are looking to do is to take what we have and be able to develop it further so that it can be used on the iPad and that Apple would provide technological resources that would help us do that. But the other thing that was very interesting to the Apple Vice President is there is not an Apple Service Center south of the University of Chicago. So if you live on the south side or the northern part of the south suburbs, and you have an Apple device, you either have to go to Orland to get it repaired or the University of Chicago. So the fact that Chicago State would be creating a service center on the south side of Chicago was very interesting to the Apple Corporation, and they were excited that that is something that we're doing as part of this initiative, is creating a service center. So it serves part of the purpose of us serving the community by providing value-added resources, but also ensuring that we're serving our students and making sure that they have access to repairs and maintenance on the devices that they have here at the university.
I have some questions, Dr. Finney.
Any more questions?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
I rarely go anywhere without a list, so I have a list. And I want to precede my list with thanking you, Mrs. Dillon, for doing the work you did in order to provide me the information before I came, and to Dr. Brooks Williams for your help in that. I also appreciate the questions of my fellow board members. It's enlightened me to some extent. I'm not as eager an advocate of technology as a lot of people. I think that, frankly, in our world, one of the problems we have is a lack of human contact. Nothing disturbs me more than to see a toddler with a little machine and people trying to communicate and not being able to do it. On the other hand, I see that there are advantages to technology, and as you've described it in your responses to me, I can see that there are definitely advantages. One of my main concerns, and I guess I'll go through my list first, and then maybe you can, you know, we can go through the answers. I don't see anywhere where this money is coming from. Has this been budgeted? Is this a line item in the budget already? Are we taking this money from some other program where human contact might happen?
Well, we are taking this money out of the IT budget, and it is an IT budget for equipment. Last year, we did a refresh on computer equipment in the labs, and this year, we are proposing this program with respect to students. So we have done a lot of computer refresh in the 8 months that I have been here, and we have spent an awful lot of time negotiating with vendors to get better prices so that our money is better spent. And so we have the capability of doing some things that we might not have had otherwise because we have been very frugal with our money, and that we have been able to negotiate some very good discounts with our vendors with respect to money that we would otherwise have had to spend. So we've gotten more for the dollar, which is creating the opportunity for us to be able to participate in cutting edge programs like this.
Okay, so we're not losing any faculty, or the money would be used for some sort of technology anyway.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you. The other question I had, and I did receive an answer, I'm not sure if it's the answer I need, but I'm concerned about the withdrawal rate of students. If we get in, and as it's, we're expecting 700 students, it looks like we might lose 200 or 300 of those students before the next year or the next semester. You have to clarify that for me. And so I'm concerned about, I'm a fiscal conservative, so I'm really concerned about the loss of this equipment and kind of what it means for the future of the program. But again, I don't like the waste of money.